I'm Brenda Dennehy.
I'm Julie Haynes.
And this is Left on Red.
Hi everyone and welcome back to Left on Red, the podcast where no topic is off limits and we get through a healthy dose of girl talk. It's like a virtual coffee date with your besties.
Spot on, Jewel. Each week we'll dive deep into a juicy topic that's bound to start discussions and fill up our DMs.
And we've got your back when it comes to recommendations. It could be makeup, movies, fashion or food. We'll fill you in what we've loved and maybe didn't love this week.
Before we wrap things up, we leave you with a motivational quote to carry with you into the week ahead. It might be nonsense, but we will try. Because let's face it, we all need a little extra boost sometimes.
Ready to go?
Let's crack on.
Hi everyone. So today it's a bit of a different episode. We're here to listen to Brenda as she tells her story of recovery, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's a long story. There's a lot to it.
There is a lot to it. So yesterday you were 5 years sober?
Tuesday the 19th.
Tuesday the 19th. And now we are recording we're recording here on Thursday. But you wrote a status on social media and I'm going to read out the status here. It reads, 5 years sober today. At this exact time on 19th March 2019, my mother dropped me off at a treatment centre in Galway. I'll never forget Joe Duffy's Lifeline had just come on the radio. At that moment, I believed my life was over, yet I didn't realise it was just beginning. Not many know the depth of my addiction journey, filled with both trials and triumphs. However, where there's a rock bottom, there's always a comeback. About 8 weeks into my treatment, I wrote my mom a letter that included the line, I promise you, I'll make the mother of all comebacks. 5 years, 60 minutes, 1,826 days later, I'm glad to say I'm still working on my comeback story one day at a time.
I was getting emotional.
I was as well, I'm not going to lie, I'm tearing up.
You said 60 minutes, 60 months. But that's going to clear up the nervous energy now because...
I was meant to say 5 years, 60 minutes.
But that's going to stay because it's funny now because we are here. We're both nervous, but it's nervous energy where we both want to laugh. So that's actually the bit of icebreaker there. And I suppose with that, everyone like, as I said in my Instagram yesterday, I was in awe of the response from people. And the big thing that I'm kind of learning from people, I never knew that now you're 5 years sober, but my God, there's a way more than the 5 years. Like, so my addiction doesn't stem back from 5 years ago. Believe it or not, my addiction is 15 years, if not more. Like, I suppose to give people a backstory to it. You know the way a lot of people say that addiction comes from trauma and all that kind of stuff. So luckily enough, mine isn't based on trauma. I actually do believe that I was born with an addictive gene. I'm just getting a bit emotional now thinking about that. But I suppose I was just one, sorry. A lot of people do have trauma growing up, but I didn't. And I suppose I was just feel like it's always something with me where I was always addicted to something as a child, whether it was cleaning, whether it was fizzy drinks. Like I remember my first addiction being like a can of Coke. Like my mum would give us 40 pence pocket money a day. And I'd want the can of Coke. That's what I wanted. You know what I mean? There was always something. And I used to really bad. You know, people say, I'm OCD with cleaning. Like I was OCD that I was getting up. I think I was 8 or 9 in the middle of the night wanting to hoover the house, take out the ashes. They were still red. But I had this thing where I wanted to clean. And I think maybe it was kind of looking for praise or something like that. Or something. I don't know that you were a good girl or something. And like, I need to stress here, my mother and father, you've met them, beautiful people. I have a sister, Julie, 2 brothers, Niall and Donal. The most beautiful, stunning family, the most loved family. Like, I've never heard my mother or father argue. You know what I mean? I get on with my siblings, like, they're my best friends. So I didn't have that trauma. So I think mine goes back from, as I was saying, being a child, being addicted to something. And I remember the cleaning got so extreme. One time my sister walked in, I remember the stairs were hoovered and we'd horses out the back and my sister walked in with sawdust in her boots and I actually had a little nervous breakdown that she had gone up the stairs with the sawdust. Like I'd a little...
And you were a child.
I was a child. Like I was screaming, crying and like, I said they couldn't understand but it was like, oh, it doesn't matter. It's just sawdust. But to me, it was like a big deal because this was so bad. You know what I mean? It was always something. And then like I used to have, we'll say... timetables and stuff like that. I used to have, like when I was like 9 or 10 again, I used to have my day written out like 7 o'clock, get up, 7:05, get dressed, 7:10, watch the news, 7, and I was probably, I don't know, the news now, but whatever I was doing, 7:10, do this. And if I was late for a time or something, I'd be so upset. I was so upset. And I don't know what it was. There was always something. I was always up to something. And then later years again, it was massively drinking Coca-Cola. Like, I mean, I was on 6 litres a day. That was my thing. That was my vice then. And then...
Was that your teenage years?
Teenage years, yeah. And then there was the kind of the OCD where something bad was going to happen to me. You know what I mean? Like, if I didn't check the door several times, something was going to happen to me and all these thoughts and everything. I was like, it was never... Like, I was a very happy child growing up. I was great crack. And lovely friends in national school and a great like upbringing from a small village, Ballydeas in North Cork. And then, believe it or not, like I always said to myself that I was never going to drink. Like I went to teenage discos where a few of my friends would be drinking in the back of Cullen Disco, and I wanted to be a pioneer. And that's hilarious now to me that I wanted to be a pioneer. I just didn't want to drink. I remember going to my confirmation and I took the name Veronica and I was like, yeah, I remember saying to the bishop, like, I'm going to be a pioneer. With them when I look back. So I suppose the story of addiction would start from when I was 19. I never intended to drink, but I remember I was out at a wedding in Killarney and I was going out with a guy. I wasn't going out with him too long. And I remember saying, can I get a Diet Coke? Coke, obviously Coke was my drink of choice. And he came back and got me the drink. And...
Coke.
Coca-Cola, yeah. Not okay. Coke, not cocaine.
Yeah, I know, but did you just think you were drinking?
I thought I was just drinking Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
And he came back and I drank it. And I was like, there's something wrong with this. It's like it's gone off or something. There's something not right. And then I realised something changed in me. And I was like, something's at that. And then he got a laugh out of it. And, oh, there's a vodka in that. And first of all, I was shocked as in like, because I'm not meant to drink. I don't drink. I'm a pioneer. I'm going to be a pioneer.
How old were you now at this
19.
Wedding? So you were 19. Just 19 and this was your first ever drink. And you didn't even call the drink. It was, you just wanted a normal Coke.
My plan for life was to be a pioneer because my father's a pioneer. I wanted to be a pioneer. My older brother doesn't drink. I wanted to, just something in me. Mm. I wanted to be a pioneer. And something did something to me that night with that drink. And instead of going, stop, oh my God, I'm in shock. I remember it was like a release. It was something happened to me. It was like, oh my God. And I was, I never forget, Come On Eileen, you know that song was on?
Yeah.
And I remember being up in the chair like a few minutes later, jumping up. And I was always good fun, but it was like, there was life in me. There was something in me. And of course, I wanted another one. It wasn't like, don't give me another one. It was like, get me another one of them. Get me another one of them. And I didn't get like piss drunk, but it was like this new world. It was like my anxiety had left.
Mm.
It was like it disappeared. And it was like this new drink thing was like, and it was like harmless because it's drink. All my friends are doing it. So then we'd go out in Killarney the weekends. And I suppose I was always kind of afraid to tell my mother and father I was drinking, but they would have assumed it anyway. It's not that they were like, don't ever drink. It was my idea to be the pioneer.
Yeah.
And then my other friends I went to school with, we'd go back to Killarney and we'd have nights out and I was drinking normally. And then I suppose I went to college and then that was grand as well. I was going to all my lectures and all that kind of stuff. I was going in, went to college in Limerick, was going out in the Trinity Rooms, was crawling into college the next day with a hangover like every other person.
Like all the students were, do not the time.
Like all the students were. Yeah. And then I suppose how it changed then, I got out of college and I was after doing 2 degrees in media. And it was a recession hit, so I got out of college in 2008 and like there was a big, massive recession then. And I thought RT were going to come calling me, giving me a job, like, you know, on 2FM or something. Mm. You know, because I had 2 degrees. Do you know what I mean? Like, I have 2 degrees, so you're going to, like, I'm great.
You thought they were going to knock at yours.
Oh, yeah. Because I had 2 degrees in media, do you know? And for some reason, like, it wasn't happening. And I didn't have the ambition I have now or the self-belief or anything like that. You know, I didn't realise you have to work hard to get where you want in this world. You know, they're not just good, nothing special about you, Brenda. There's hundreds of other people who want the same job as you. Yeah. And then I was just kind of, I had no ambition. So I was like, I'll settle now doing this job. And, you know, I was working call centres and there's nothing wrong with that or anything like that. But I found myself kind of slithering into like a bit of a depression. I'm very slow to use that word at times because I hear people go, I'm depressed. And it might mean they're just down. And then people who actually really have depression, I just want to be kind of careful in that. But what I say, it's very, very, like I would say, like I wasn't taking anything for the depression, but the down that I had, like it was harder than any other time I'd been down. And obviously I needed something to pick me up. So I suppose I started drinking, but this was drinking in the quiet.
Were you drinking at home?
Well, first I was living away from home at the time, but I would notice myself buying cans on the way home from work and drinking, but in the quiet because I didn't want anyone to see me drinking it, you know. And now this now was like when I was 23, 24. So this, like this is back, oh my God, what age? 2008, 2009. There was hardly no social media or anything like that. So if you were like, I didn't think there was anything wrong with me. I was just like, I'll keep this a secret now, whatever. But then what would happen? Then I'd be drinking more. And then the next day, the downer would be so bad. I was like, what can I do? Get over this anxiety. It's too much. I'd have to drink again. No, I would never have gone into work with drink on me or anything like that. But then I couldn't wait to get home from work because this down feeling, this anxiety was eating me up. So I would be drinking like at night time. And then if I was off, I'd be drinking all during the day. But then sure, I couldn't keep up with a job and everything. So then I went out with that. And then I remember moving back home and I remember working for my mom and dad, you know, they had a business and I was working in the office and tried no ambition and go or anything like that. And the downer kept saying, but I couldn't say anything to anyone because it was so embarrassing. Because I was only 23.
Yeah.
It's only 23, so I didn't know what was wrong with me. And I suppose my mom would have said, you know, sometimes, you know, I think like, you know, things aren't okay. And I was like, oh no, everything's fine, everything's fine. And then you just make so many fuck ups and stuff like that. And you've just no, like I remember going to America on holidays with my friend. I can barely remember any of it. It's just all drink fest. Going to Las Vegas, so that was like a dream for me. The whole thing was just drink. But to me, that was a great time because, geez, I was pissed for all of it. But like, I remember she was drinking differently to me. Do you know, I was like, come on, we'll get up now and we'll go for a drink down at the casino. She didn't want to do that. Do you know what I mean? The signs were there.
Yeah.
And then you see that a lot of your friends, they don't want to drink with you anymore because they're like, she's drinking at a different level than me. But you don't want to drink with them anymore because you think they're no fun.
Mm.
And you think there's something wrong with them rather than something wrong with you. But I think what happened then, like I say at the height of disrespect, that I started drinking in my own family's home up in my bedroom, which was shocking. And then if my mother or father would see me doing or catch me, I'd lie. You'd lie straight out. They'd see you with a can and you'd hide it. And they'd be like, you're drinking. No, I swear to God. The lies just follow. With addiction, the lies just follow. It's in, like, it's, and I'd be a very honest person. And I look back with the manipulator it brings out in you. It's actually scary. You're like a different person. Yeah. Jekyll and Hyde. And that's the height of disrespect for me. And that was ongoing. And several times they did kind of mention, look, we think there's something wrong. You probably need help. And of course, I'd be like, I couldn't be an alcoholic because an alcoholic is someone who was in the streets of London with the paper bag.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That wasn't me. Do you know, how could I be a shy? I was only out of college. The world was going to owe me great things. So I wouldn't believe it for a while. And things just got messier and messier. And I'll never forget with that drink then. The drink got so out of hand. I'll never forget the All-Ireland. I was big into GAA. And Cork and Down were playing in 2010, the All-Ireland. And my dad got me a ticket for it. And Cork won that year. And like, this was big now because I was so obsessed. And I never forget my mom and dad saying to me, like, we got you a ticket for the match. And I was staying in Dublin at my friend's house. And of course, going to Coppers, going on the piss and all this. He said, please try not to drink on the day of the match. And I was like, sure, I won't, I promise. But sure, it's such a hangover again the next day. And the anxiety was killing me. And it was Cork's big day. I had to take a drink. But I can't remember. I remember the pub, but I can't remember the name. It was just off of Collins Street. And I said, I go in for the cure. And I never forget. The thing is, I do believe there was something put into my drink, spiked of something. After one drink, I was just all over the place. I was an absolute holy show. I never forget my mother and father were waiting for me outside Gill's pub. And like, I was stumbling and everything. Like,
did you go
Christ.
Into that bar on your own?
I went all in on my own. I needed the cure. I left my drink to go for the toilet. And I was fucked. I'm going to have to use the word fucked. And I'm trying not to swear. And I was outside.
What were you drinking in there?
Bulmers. I was always like, Bulmers. And then I went up to, met them outside Gills. And sure, I was stumbling. Like, they were absolutely horrified. Absolutely horrified. And I imagine the disgust and just my poor father, like, after getting me that. Just, you know, he just got so much effort getting me that ticket and I did that. And they just, you know what? And I do believe that something was put into my drink, but it was like they weren't believing me, but I just so let them down so much. And I was with my mom at the match and she'd hold me and everything in the match because I couldn't stand up and like, I was just fucked. And I kept telling her, my drink was spiked. She was kind of like, it wasn't like, as in, look, what's wrong? She said, what's wrong with you? And I just remember the whole match, like Cork won it, it just broke my heart because they were after winning and sure, you were waiting for years. Now I know I'm like, no, Jay, like, yeah. I'm not Larry Tompkins here. No, they were Pat Spillane, but it was just a big deal. And like, I ruined the day for myself, but I ruined it for them. And then I never forget being at the Ashling Hotel, you know, across the way from Houston. Yeah. And I remember we got a taxi back and my head was all over the place. And I remember just looking at my mother and I was like, I need help. And she said, she was so happy. She was just so happy that I just said I needed help. But that was my rock bottom. And it was just, it's weird the whole thing that it was Cork. It was such a big event and it was like, you know, and I look at it and like, I'm glad it happened now. But, and I think, I do believe my drink was spiked, but then they weren't believing me and it was just a mixture of things. So I'll never forget, I think that was like the 20th of September, and they'd won, and like, I'll never forget my sister and friends, they were all going, I was at home, Ballydesmond, on the Monday, my mum had rang Brewery, which is a treatment centre part of Convera, and do you know, my sister and all of them were going up to Cork to see the homecoming, and just, do you know what, it was like the drunk at home, I was a useless alcoholic at home, and I couldn't go because I just made a show of myself. And I was just so upset to see them all go. And I was like, you know, I was only, I was so young, and I was just always bitter that it was happening to me.
How old were you?
I was only 25, do you know? And like, do you know, all my school friends were going up and everything. And do you know, we waited till 1990. I know it was only Larry Tompkins or something, but it was, we were waiting 10 years for Cork to win the All-Ireland. Yeah. And they were all up there, and I was like, what fucking holy show are you, like, at this, what, like, you're the disgrace. I didn't know there was something wrong, but I was like, you need to sort yourself out. So luckily my mother rang Brewery, and I was waiting for the call all week, and then they were like, you're going in Monday the 27th. I'll never forget the dates. And that was it. And I was like, oh my God, right, okay, I'm going in. And to be honest with you, like, I thought I was going away for a week, right, to, and they were going to teach me how to drink properly. Right, this is it now. It has gone to rehab. And they were going to, like, I'd no way was an alcoholic. No, I just was going through a bad spell. I was depressed and I was just using drink as, you know, helping me. And then my mother, I remember we were just getting ready to go, and I was packing a laptop, a DVD player, all the little gadgets you had back then, like a small Nokia 8210, because there was no camera phones or anything. No, back, this is showing my age. This is 2010. And I remember I was carrying all this. I swear, guys, still, I think I had a swimming trunks pack. No, I don't know where I was going. And then I remember stopping at the shop, and I remember going to my mother, oh, I need to have credit for my phone. Obviously big on the phone, texting at the time. And she remember stopping in Kearney's in Sintra and Ballydesmond. She was like, there's €40 for your phone. And sure, I was set up. I was like, sure, we're going away for the week now. They'll teach me how to drink properly and it'll all be grand. So I went into Brewery, which is in County Limerick, and going for your assessment and all that. And I bags of stuff now, like... And we're going for the test. And obviously, my mother was with me, and they were asking me how much, you know, how much did you drink? Obviously, I was lying, because I was kind of like, oh, yeah, I don't have a few drinks, whatever. My mother kind of looked at me going, she does not, you know, as in tell the truth, because they would have seen all sorts. And then anyway, I was like telling them, you know, because they need to know what you need to come off on the alcohol, like, you know, for your detox and all that kind of stuff to give you Librium. They're usually what they give you coming off alcohol. And remember him going through my bags, and he was like, where the fuck do you think you're going, the facilitator? And I was kind of like, do you know what I mean? And he's like, there's no phones here. There's no laptops here. There's no DVDs player here. There's no swimming pool here. And I was kind of like to my mother, what's going on? He was like, where do you think you're going? I was like, I'm only here for a few days. He goes, you're here for 3 months. This is a 12-week program. And I remember looking at my mother. I was like, 12 weeks? And then she was kind of looking at me. And I say she was like, oh, shit. She tricked me into going.
Yeah.
Because she knew well, if she told me what it was, I wouldn't go. So she was after buying me the €40 credit and everything, knowing everything. And then I remember walking down the hall, and he was after fleecing all my stuff out of my bag, because obviously they check if you any drugs or anything. And I remember going, I'm staying for a few days and that's it, and gone. I'm fucking gone. I'm not staying here. There's nothing wrong with me. She was like, yeah, stay for a few days. And then I remember just being put into a room with another girl, and she was, we'll say, detoxing, and she was a lovely girl. And you're lying there then in your pyjamas for a week because you're detoxing. But then they were after giving me Librium for the week. And the first week was grand because it was like nearly a tranquilizer. Kind of, you're still kind of blurry and stuff. You don't realize the damage you've done. And then, of course, I was just like, sure, I'm grand. I'm not like these people at all here. You know, they're the problem. Sure, I'm grand. I'm just going through a bad spell. And then I remember my family came up the first week, and God love them. Like, do you know, their faces, do you know what I mean? I felt like I was after leaving them. But do you know, I never forget. They brought Jake up.
Oh, the dog.
Yeah. And that's why Jake means so much to me as well. And I get upset now about him because he's so old. Because, do you know, he was there for the first round of addiction and he was there for the second round, which we'll talk about later. And do you know what I mean? Like, when you're so low and you feel like you can't talk to anyone, it's just the dog.
He was your best friend? Yeah.
Even the days where, like, I was probably drinking on my own and I probably knew there was something wrong. Sure, he'd only be looking at you without love. And he, do you know, he probably was like, she's
never judged as a little dog. Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
I know.
But as the week... As the medication wore off or whatever, I was there seriously like going, how did this happen? And I remember being in rooms and stuff like this. And I was like, but sure, he's 50 now. And sure, he's after doing a lot. He was caught for drink driving and sure this and all. And sure, he's after destroying the family. Sure, I'm not like him at all.
Yeah.
I'm only out of college. Like, I'm not one of them. And then the more I was listening, I was in denial, totally in denial. I think it was around the second week and I was still in Brewery and I heard people like saying, I was drinking at night and I had to go for the drink the next morning. And I was like, Jesus, I have to do that as well. Fuck, they're the same as me. And then they'd be kind of like, yeah, I saw Downer. And then I was drinking first thing in the morning. Then I remember one person saying, I woke up one day and I didn't have to know if it was 6 a.m. or 6 p.m. And I was like, oh my God, that was me. I was so messed up. I didn't know what day it was. And I was like, that was me. And then I can't explain. It was like a divine intervention. I swear. And I know people don't believe in that kind of stuff, but something came over me and I couldn't say it all along for the first 2 weeks. And then all of a sudden I was like, hi, my name is Brenda. I'm an alcoholic. And I started bawling.
It was
bawling,
a meeting
crying.
In the meeting. Treatment center, yeah.
Everyone was talking. I was like, I'm one of E. And then all of us, because I wasn't talking any of the meetings, like for a woman who talks, I just wouldn't. Because I was like, I'm not one of you. I'm just like, nah.
But because of you listening to everybody else in the meeting.
I was like, they're all think like yeah. me.
In relation, like it was relatable.
They're all related
yeah.
with them.
Yeah, yeah.
And then,
how long were you in the treatment program?
I was 12 weeks.
But before you put your hand up, was it
2 weeks?
2 weeks in.
Okay. 2 weeks to do it. Because the first week I was all a blur because I was probably, look, I'll be honest, I was detoxing.
Yeah.
You're still on something. But like getting sober is easy. Staying sober is the hardest part. That's what they say. Mm. Getting sober, that's grand. But the mess you leave after. I was looking at all the mess I'd done to my family. Poor innocent family. There's like... awful when you think the guilt comes in, then you're like, Jesus, what happened?
Were you getting that guilt then in the second week?
When you were sobering up.
When you were not sober, when you were on nothing.
When you were
raw,
the come down. Yeah, yeah. And the realization that you're stuck here for another 10, 11 weeks and all the work you're going to have to do in yourself.
And can you like describe the come down? Like, was it?
Oh, the realization like, hit home, the downer.
Sleeping? Were you sleeping? Were you eating?
Very. Now, that first round, sleeping was much better. The first round, there was always the guilt and the paranoia waking up and stuff like that. But with brewery, what happened then was we were sharing it with men. Mm. And it's kind of based on spirituality. You'd go to mass every day and all that kind of stuff. But men and women, it's not a good idea if men and women mix.
Okay.
Because you become codependent. And I get that because I remember fancying a guy in Limerick. I remember fancying a guy in Galway because you're like, he thinks like me. You're drawn to them.
Yeah.
Because you're like, he's erratic thinking that I do. Yeah. And you're so codependent. But you're kind of told, don't get involved with someone who's in recovery of the opposite sex.
Okay.
But I suppose the relief was when I was able to say I was an alcoholic and like get over myself. There was nothing special about me. I'm 25. There's people out there who are 18, 19 alcoholics. To be honest with you, Julia, was I an alcoholic from my first drink? Probably. You know, the way it hit, I drank differently from everyone. I was able to keep up, but I always wanted more. And we did 2 weeks in Bury, but then I didn't know this. One day we were told to pack up, you're going away in a bus. Tried to tell we're going away and retreat again or something. We were taken up to Fernand's, which is a different facility just outside Cork. Just
and that
room.
Was all the women. You were taken out of the centre.
That was all the women. And then they meant business there. You walked up there and I was walking in there. I was so nervous because they were just... There was probably people that I had never come across in all my life. There was people, heroin addicts. There was people who had been involved in sex work. You know what I mean? I was only 25. I was from a small little village in Ballydesmond. Do you know what I mean? There was people from all walks of life. And you know what? It was amazing to get to know them all because, you know, the way it's not that I was kind of, you know, sheltered or anything like that. But would I have been able to kind of socialise with any of the people in other parts of my life kind of made me realise it can happen to anyone.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you think that the alcoholic or the drug addict is the person on the street begging. You know what I mean? I met like people who are, we'll say, top bankers. Mm. There's people from every profession. And some of those women, the people who are heroin addicts and everything, I'm still friends with this day and thankfully they're in recovery, but it teaches a good lesson in life, you know, not to judge anyone.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that it can happen to anyone. But in there, that was hard going because we were only allowed, no fizzy drinks taken off you. You were, you only had fake money. You had like fake coins because there's a pub down the road and like people used to break out to go down to the pub.
If they had real money.
Yeah, but they go down and you'd hear someone's own tatties again.
Oh,
yeah, if someone got out, yeah. No, it sounds like prison.
Yeah.
But it was like, Jesus, she's gone down to the pub because you'd fake money because there was only a pub down the road. That was the kind of ironic thing about it. But we were allowed 10 cigarettes a day. You were like, all the whole thing of it was you had to be up at like 6:30 and at no time in that day you were allowed, you're on your own. You got no space on your own because like being on your own is like a big thing of addiction. You know what I mean? It's a big thing, being on your own. So you were always with someone. So you get up in the morning, you go to your meditation, you do your group, you have your breakfast, you do your chores, then you do your group, and it's all day. You don't stop going till like 9 o'clock at night.
And would every day be the same?
Every day is the same, except for the weekends. And then where I was, because it was based on spirituality, we'd go to mass every day.
Okay.
And we used to do the rosary every day. And to believe it or not, like, we all became so holy.
Yeah, okay.
Like I was going around rosary beads. Like I was, we all got to say who was doing the Angelus. Like as in, right, Brenda, you're leading the Angelus today. And we always be fighting for it. Because yeah. we'd, and you'd know every prayer off. And you'd really kind of, I'd be more spiritual now. But like I got, when I got, I was in charge of putting out the altar water for the priest. I was charged the wine in a rehab facility.
And were you ever tempted then to take the wine?
I wasn't, but oftentimes people would be asking me like, as in, do you have the keys for the wine? Do you know what I mean? But I didn't have the keys.
Because they wanted the
yeah,
the
they
wine.
Wanted the, yeah.
Altar wine.
All this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then you were, if they'd mass and you were given a big job like that, so I was in charge of the laundry then. So I had the keys to the laundry and I'd be up in the laundry and all the jobs and stuff like that. So I was doing well out of that. And I did 15 weeks there. And I came out and then all was good. It was hard kind of getting the life back together again because at the time I had to pretend I disappeared to go to Milan teaching, right? Because I was so ashamed because, do you know the way people talk about addiction? No, it's kind of like, it's way more out there. No one was doing that. It was shame.
Very taboo, like, yeah. Yeah,
I thought my friends wouldn't understand. And like one or two of them back then were kind of like, you should have told me, but I was so embarrassed. I was like, why was the prodigal daughter? That's what yeah. I call myself. And it's funny because there's a play called The Prodigal Son and I played the prodigal son in an Irish play for Ballydoyle National School and I say I'm like the prodigal daughter that I christened myself that. Yeah, do you know what I mean? Yeah. So, but I'd never thought they would understand, but then a few of them were kind of like, you should have told us. But then when I got out, I was kind of at a, like, what will I end up doing? So I remember my dad was kind of, the media thing was never happening, even though it was always my dream. But I was like, do you know what? Now I just don't have the skills. I don't have the drive in me. So I remember my dad saying one time, will you go away and be a teacher for yourself? And I was kind of like, all right, so I'll go into that because I had the arts degree. So I went away and I did that. And I, do you know what? I wasn't happy to do it. I went to UCC. I was kind of miserable doing it. I was very, not down, but like there was no life in me. Do you know, there was no life in me. I was getting up and I felt, because I was a mature student at the time, so I was only 27, 28. I was like, this is me. But look, I said, look, I'll just do it. I was probably keeping other people happy because, yeah. you know, I felt useless. I felt like, you know, like I felt sorry for myself nearly. You know, I felt the useless one out of the family and stuff like that, even though that wasn't the way at all.
I know, yeah.
Because they were very proud of me after turning things around. And then I remember being at a hen in February 2013 and I was going to be finishing in 2015 college and I was on night out. I wasn't drinking, of course. And I remember in Kilkenny, it was out in Kilkenny and I left the nightclub because I wasn't enjoying it, whatever. And I met these two guys in the street and they were from the north and we were just having such a laugh and I was doing the fool as always. And then they started recording me doing the clown in the street and we were having such a laugh and they were playing it back and we were roaring laughing and they were like, what do you do for a living? And I was like, oh, I'm going to be a teacher. And they're like, geez, you know, you should be on TV, you should be in media. And it was like something, a light bulb went off and I was like, all right. They go, no, no, you should. And then I started crying to them on the street. I didn't tell them about the addiction, but I was kind of like, well, I was qualified and I always wanted to and all this. And they were like, no, you need to go back and do it. And again, like it was like a divine, I ran to my sister. I was like, Julie, I'm going to go off and I'm going to go for the meeting. These guys told me I was funny. And she was like, yeah, you need to. So then we were coming home. Then I was telling everyone on the bus then. Telling everyone. I couldn't wait to get home to my mother then. And I was like, oh, I have to go away and do it. My mother was kind of like, yeah, that's grand. I'll finish college. And then that whole summer 2013, I went up to the, to talk about Holy again. I went up to Life FM in Cork, the Christian station. Mm-hmm. And that place, no, I learned my skill in radio editing and all that kind of stuff in there. And I learned what I needed to know how to edit this, that and the other. Because if you're going into work experience somewhere, the last thing they want is, can you show me this? Can you show me that? Yeah. So I was like, I'm going to get into 96FM. I'm going to get into 96FM. 96FM now was the big thing at the time. And I got into like work experience in 98FM in Dublin, bit of news talk and then I did something with RTE called Sober Sisters. I made my sister do it actually with Brenda Dunahoo.
Yeah.
Sober Sisters, when I look back, my sister, I just got her because like, Julie, they'll get a job. We'll get a job on RTE. Never did happen. But I went into 96FM that October, a couple of weeks after finishing off the stuff in Life FM. And I never forget Emer and Colm from Neil Prendeville's show. I walked in and they were like, they probably just thought she's like every other work experience girl. Hi, how are you? I said, yeah, da, da, da. They're doing something in Roy Keane. And I said, will I go downtown and do Vox Pops about Roy Keane? And they were like, really? Can you do that? And I goes, yeah. And they're like, but there's no one really around the city. You won't get anyone to talk. And I was like, oh, no, I will. Don't worry. Ran down, nearly had people up by the neck. Were you talking to the mic? Come on. Yeah, yeah. So I did it and I came back up and I was able to edit and all this kind of stuff. And then I turned it around in so much time. They played it on air and Neil hadn't met me then. And they played it on the radio. Neil came out and he goes, who did that vox pop? And then they're like, oh, this is Brenda here. And from that day on, he was like, all right, I like that. And they started giving me shifts. And then, of course, Neil moved to Red FM and then an opening came and I got the job at 96 FM. And I tell you, Jewel, it was like, I couldn't believe it. I was after it. It was a big thing, turned the life around. You know, no, I never told anyone about the alcoholic addiction, you know what I mean? But I was sober. I was still going, I was going
How
to AA.
How long were you sober at this stage?
I was sober 3 years at that stage.
Wow. Okay.
And I was going to AA and all that kind of stuff. So it carried on and then I moved on to Red FM and in all that time I was emceeing events. Life was brilliant. Cock of the walk, as they say. Probably got a bit too confident in myself. It was the time that I was going into AA and stuff like that. And then I was kind of like going, Jesus Christ, if anyone finds out I'm in here. And they were kind of like, what's so fucking great about you? I never forget them saying it. And then I was kind of like, right, you need to kind of tone it down here. And I had an inkling something bad was going to happen to me again. I just had this something wasn't right. The addiction wasn't done with me. I never forget what they said. That I was like, there's something not going to go right here. So I'd moved to Red FM and I was back working with Neil, which was brilliant where I started. He'd given me my first chance. I was back there again, working with Emer, working with Cullum. I had a great time working with PJ and all that, great time. But what happened then was I always suffer with a bit of anxiety, whatever. And then, I don't know, this anxiety kept at me and at me and at me. And do you know what? I was going on nights out and like, I used to be desperate going into Raritans. I wouldn't even fucking all my friends in before me going, I can't walk in first. My anxiety is up. And I was just so sick of it and I couldn't drink. Mm. I was off the cigarettes. There was nothing I could use, right? Nothing at all I could use. I was like, I need something. And then I went to my doctor, never disclosed to him that I had any addiction. He didn't know, gave me Xanax. Now, what is someone with an addiction doing taking up another sedative, like something that's mood altering? Like, in fair, I knew in the back of my head this is a bad idea, but I was going to look, I need something. I won't get hooked. No, I won't. I know how to handle these things. So started taking them. And again, like the first drink when I was 19, this massive release, as in like, oh my God, thank God it's gone. And then I was going out and stuff like that. And then like you'd be given maybe two a day, prescribed two a day, but they'd be gone. And then you'd start telling porkies, as in, oh, I lost them. Or something happened, they went into the wash. Do you know all these lies? Yeah. And then, like your doctor, then he'd take you for being honest. Mm. And then, fuck it again, I'm hooked on these again. And even worse again. And then when they couldn't get them off the doctor, I'd know friends that had them. And to me then, how are you not taking the Xanax? Like how can you have this and not want to be taken, knocking them back? Because in the addict head, that doesn't make sense. So then when I wouldn't have the Xanax, my anxiety was so, so bad. And it's something I didn't think I would end up doing. I remember being at a house party over in Bishopstown and my anxiety was so bad. And I should have just gone home. I was so bad. I was remember just taking a vodka and coke. And I hadn't drank in 8 years. 8 years. And that anxiety was so bad. I'd knock back the drink and I was like, look, sure, no one will find out. Even the first sip, I was like, sure, it's grand. And it was like, no one really knows about my alcohol story, so they don't know the better. It's only the family and the close friends at home. Sure, I'll get away with it. I'm up in Cork. And I never forget, even that night, I was back smoking cigarettes and I was off cigarettes a few years. Within weeks. So the drinking probably got worse again. And before, I was getting away with it a bit. And my mother probably knew, but and my sister probably knew, but it was kind of like, I'm getting away with it. I'll go home to Belly Desmond. And I wasn't smoking at home. I'd be like, don't smoke now or anything. Because they'll know she's on back on one thing. She's probably back on everything else. And things were like, stuff was happening. Like, do you know what I mean? Stuff starts crumbling. One big incident for me, there was a Miss Cork event that I was a judge for. Jesus Christ, I'll never forget. And I was judging it and I wasn't too bad in it. But then after I remember getting absolutely pissed. And I remember I wasn't even in Red FM that long. And I remember shitting it that like the lads were going to find out. My boss was going to find out. And they did find out. But I was like, oh, I'll rein it in, whatever. But they had no idea about the alcohol problem. They had no idea I was an alcoholic. And then one of the really bad times that happened was I was actually emceeing an event in the Rochestown Park Hotel. And Sandra, our good friend Sandra, was one of the other judges. And I remember I was drinking beforehand, mixed with Xanax, absolute recipe for disaster. But you always think you're going to be okay. you always think you're going to be all right. And I went in and I was an MC up on the table, like, you know, the events you do. And the drink, the two of them mix, it was so bad. Like, it was, I can't remember a lot of, but I made a show of myself. And I remember I had to leave early because I had to be taken home because I was so drunk. Like, what a letdown to the person who actually hired me. But that's how bad I was. And I'll never forget going home that night. And I remember being home around 10 o'clock. And I remember, like, fuck, this is awful. And I remember, like, look, it can't be that bad and stuff. Like, but I had made a show of myself. And I went drinking more that night. But then the next day is when it hit. And I never forget opening up the phone. And you know the horrors you'd have?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And I never forget the messages from two people in particular. And I mean the horrific stuff that was being sent. Now, I felt bad enough as it was. And then I had figured out that one of the people presenting at it had said, oh, when I was gone, oh, that's just Brenda there now laughing at me having to be carried out. She's just gone to Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was said back to me the next day. And sure, when you hear that. So then what happened then was, some people might get on with it, maybe turn off their phone, whatever. But the abuse kept coming from certain individuals. And, you know, you're just shaming it, whatever. So I remember I was meant to go to work on the Monday. And I just couldn't face, because I was like, they all know at work. They all know I'm Red FM. The shame is going to kill me. I can't go. So then I remember, I don't know, did I ring my mother and tell her to call in sick for me or something like that? Things were gone so bad. Or did I get Karen, the girl, I don't know, did Karen, the girl I lived with at the time, did she ring my mom? I can't remember the exact nature of it. But I remember getting a bottle of vodka and I remember taking Xanax with it, right? Things were so bad. The shame and the messages, and I couldn't take it. The next thing I knew, I was inside in a hospital bed in A&E, CDU actually. And I didn't know how I got there. I had no idea how I got there. And I remember waking up and I remember my mother and my brother looking at me. And like, the first thing you think is that they're going to be roaring the head off you. You know what I mean? They weren't. They were just so sad for me. I had no idea how I got there. I just didn't know. I had no clue. It turns out, like, I'd taken so much that I accidentally overdosed. And see, the thing with that, I couldn't believe it. Like, I was like, I didn't want to kill myself. I did not want to kill myself. I kept saying, like, I didn't. And I couldn't understand. I was waiting for them to go, you know, go off their head at me like, you fucking disgrace. Remember my sister ringing and everything from Abu Dhabi, just so upset. They were so, even my dad, my other brother, they were just devastated for me. And I couldn't care, because I was like, I'm awful. I'm an awful person. But I suppose my point is, I did it to myself. But those comments and those nasty messages and what that person said about me, like that effect, would it have happened? I don't know, but that kind of stuff can lead to you doing shit like that to yourself. So I just couldn't get my head around. Like, and I felt so bad. Then I'd like kind of trying to convince, I wasn't trying. It was just an accident. It's just an accident. And you know when you hear people accidentally overdosing, like, I never got my head around that, but I was like, Jesus. So then I did try and turn it around, but fuck it, it just was too strong. And I never forget my poor mother. In fairness, she was ringing Neil, and Neil, he was just so kind, so good, obviously. She didn't want to kind of, I didn't want him knowing. He must have known something. Mm. And Raimer and all the gang at Red FM, they were so good. And then I can remember taking a week off and I thought I'd be okay. And I remember that time my mother saying, look, do you need to go back in for help? And I was like, no, I'll be fine. I'm going to lose my job in Red FM. I'm going to lose my job in Red FM. I can't go back in. And then I think I lasted another 6 or 7 months. And Jesus, I was just getting worse and worse. I'd have a good few days and then a bad few days. And then it just wasn't myself. I was so unhappy. I was just not me. And then leading up, I think it was March this time now, 5 years ago, I was inside in Red FM one day. And like I didn't realise what I was at, how bad I was, because you're out of it.
Yeah.
You think you're present. You're not. You're out of it. I'd never gone into work with drink on me or anything like that. But obviously, you'd be craving a drink. Jesus Christ. If it was like the old days where you could go for a drink on your break, you'd be delighted. But I never did. But I would be truthful. Obviously, I needed something to try and help. Maybe you don't know how bad you are. But I never forget one day. No, obviously, things had been said to me. But, you know, you always think, I'll be all right. I'll sort it out. Don't worry. I'll fix myself. Like, I thought I was present, but I wasn't. I wasn't at all when I look back. Do you know what I mean? I was still getting good guests and all that kind of stuff. But you know, the way I was Brenda from Red FM, like people meet Brenda, that's Neil Prendable's producer, or Brenda, that's PJ Coogan's producer. Mm. Do you know the way Julie Twins and Me?
Yeah.
Imagine if Twins and Me was gone. Like, it's kind of, it's sad in a way. That's what I thought of myself, but that was my identity. So I'll never forget, I was called into the office, the CEO and the financial controller, and I knew there was something not right, but maybe it was just a warning or something. Because, you know, usually you go formal warning, all that kind of stuff, written warning. And I'll never forget, they called me, and I just never forget, they were looking at me. And like, they were, Fiona, the financial controller at the time, she was so worried, was so sad for me. And I was like, what's coming down the line here? And I'll never forget, they just said that, like, I'm sorry, but we have to terminate your contract. And I just couldn't get over it. I was like, what? Your work hasn't been acceptable, Brenda, the last while. And I couldn't believe it, because I was like, no, like, I'm grand. I'll fix myself. I'm grand. This is only like a moment in my life. Like, I'll pick myself up. I'll do this. I'll do that. They're like, Brenda, we're sorry. And I swear to God, let me tell you this. What followed after that was way worse than the drink.